Welcome to this short audio recording on cross-cultural communication. This is not a comprehensive talk on cross-cultural communication, but highlighting certain key issues we need to consider when we work in cross-cultural context. Many of us who worked in cross-cultural context would have experienced challenges of communication. We communicate something, it is perceived differently, or people communicate something to us and we perceive it in one way and they feel that that is what, not what they wanted you to understand or perceive. Why does this happen? I want to look at five broad issues and then at the end look at Jesus and communication. The first important thing is to understand that language and words matter. When we go to a cross-cultural context with a language which is different, we learn the language and try to communicate with the local language. Or sometimes use a translator, but most of us would have learned the local language. But the challenge with language itself is that as you move from one part of that community to another part of the community, the meanings of word matter. It matter and change. So if you use one word in one context, other part of the country with the same language, it may be different. And then if you don't know how these words are perceived, you would be either seen as not having learned the language properly or you would be looked at with suspicion. A classic example was when we were working in rural North India, where people had to be addressed with respectfully. The word aap, it's a respectful word of addressing somebody. But in another part of the country, you are allowed to use the not so respectful word, tum or tu. But if that same word is used in the first context, they would literally walk out on you. Whereas in the second context, if you use a respectful language, they look at you with suspicion because they don't expect to be respected. How do you understand these differences and communicate in such a way that they perceive that we are there to journey with them, to build a relationship? Sometimes one wrong communication is enough to cut off relationships. So very important to understand that language and words matter, and we need to clearly understand the local dialect and what words are important there and how they are perceived in that community or culture. The second aspect I want to look at is cultural values. Hofstede is one well-known writer who has written much about cultural values. I want to pick up six cultural values which are important for us, which might influence our communications. One is individualistic culture versus collective culture. Some communities are individualistic, where decisions are taken by the individual. Autonomy is very important for them and confidentiality is very important. Whereas there are other cultures where decisions are taken in a collective, in the family or extended family, where there is no strong emphasis on autonomy, and they would expect you to communicate in such a way that nobody is shamed at the same time the story is told to them. I remember working in the HIV field, and in one part of the country where we were working, I, having been trained in the Western individualistic strict confidentiality and autonomy systems, tried to communicate the diagnosis of HIV positivity to a patient, and he straight away told me on the face, please don't tell me anything, go and tell my family, they will tell me what to do. I said, no, doesn't work that way. He said, no, sorry, they have to tell me what I should do. At the same time, I realized if I tell the family, I shouldn't shame that person. So how do you move from confidentiality to a shared confidentiality? Understanding that that culture is a collective culture. The second cultural value which need to be considered is the power equations or power distances, hierarchical culture. In a hierarchical culture, if you are up in the ladder of hierarchy, no questions will be asked. Usually in healthcare context, doctors are in the upper strata of the hierarchy. So in a team meeting, if the doctor or the team leader makes his opinion or her opinion first, in some cultures, the rest of the staff will keep quiet. Again, I had to learn the hard way. An issue comes up and I'll give my opinion, everybody will sit quiet and say, let's do it. Much later, I realized that there were opinions. Everybody had opinions and they wanted to talk about it. But they would not talk because they felt the leader has already decided what he or she wanted to do. So in that kind of a culture, the leader will have to behave in such a way to listen to everybody, bring in their opinions first and then consolidate it together and give his or her opinion as the last to bind it all together. If you go the other way around, what you want will be done. Nobody will have any opinion expressed because they respect hierarchy. The third cultural value which we need to consider is uncertainty avoidance. Certain cultures receive challenging information with a lot of fear and doubt, and uncertainty is not welcomed. Whereas certain cultures are risk-taking, who are willing to take the risk and look at alternative options to address the risk. And it comes out of the background, the knowledge, and also the perspectives through which they look at a challenging situation. So in a team, there might be people who might receive a challenging information with a lot of angst, but others who will receive it with submission and recognizing this is the reality we need to address. So understanding these differences are very important. Generally, it is said that West is more risk-taking than East, or North is more risk-taking than South, but sometimes in our own dominant local cultures, there will be both mixes together. One of the situations I've experienced is when we were going through a salary challenge, economic challenge, and we couldn't pay salaries, and I communicated that to the whole staff. The senior cadre of staff, who are the doctors and others, reacted vehemently against any changes being done. Whereas the lower category of staff with the dominant worldviews, who actually will be affected more, received it with much more calm and respecting reality that this is a season. Actually, the higher category of staff could have taken more risk, but they were not willing to receive that challenging information. Again, their thoughts, their thinking, why do they think the way they think? We need to understand. The fourth cultural values which need to understand is masculine and feminine cultures or ways of communication. Certain cultures have masculine values more, which means assertiveness, materialism, less concern for the rest of the people. It is the decision, the organization, the department. Whereas feminine values are cultures which have concern for all and emphasis on the quality of life and an emphasis on relationships with each other. Unless you understand these differences, how we communicate and decisions are taken would be confusing. The classic stories of Japanese versus Americans. Japanese are more value-based, concern for all, quality of life, and emphasize on relationships. Whereas the US businesses are more assertive, materialistic driven, that is means economy driven, and less concerned for the impacts it is on others, it is the company. And then there are, and we have a lot of stories about how this had led to confusion. So understanding that masculine versus feminine value systems are very important. Similarly, the fifth one is the long versus short-term orientation. Some cultures traditionally look at long-term solutions. Some cultures look at short-term. It's said that cultures which are resource poor, where basic amenities of life are not in place, like housing, education, employment, they generally look at short-term. It's not because they don't have a long-term vision, but they're constantly challenged with the day-to-day sustenance issues, and that is, their thinking is mostly short-term. So when you engage in such a culture, you need to engage with the understanding that the people would look at short-term solutions and then look at long-term. Whereas in the other cultures, you look at long-term solutions and then break it down into what can be done tomorrow. That's about the cultural values. The third broad area I want to look at is worldviews. Now, there are about three broad worldviews in the world. One is the monotheistic, the other is pantheistic, and third is the animistic. In a monotheistic worldview, generally the culture is a guilt-driven culture. In a guilt-driven culture, truth can be communicated clearly. You can say this is what it is and, you know, receive it, and it is received generally well. Whereas in a pantheistic society, generally it is a shame-based society, a shame culture, or sometimes a karma-driven culture in the South Asian context. Honor-shame culture is that anything which is communicated should not shame anybody. Their honor is very important. In a karma-based culture, a challenge situation is received as fate, a fatalism. So in a honor-shame or karma-based culture, difficult news should not be broken directly. A direct communication is generally not welcomed. Sometimes you need to tell stories to communicate and slowly bring in the truth. Third is animistic culture, where there is fear. In animistic culture, every created being has spirits. So they live in the context of a fear. So bad news is seen as influence of the evil in this particular context. Again, how do you communicate is very important. Once the community is affected by fear, they would be paralyzed and would not respond. In the midst of this three worldviews, there are also the high trust versus low trust societies. Monotheistic cultures are usually high trust, whereas most of the others are low trust. So when you in a low trust society, what we say is not received as it is. Always it is perceived that there may be something more than what it is said. The person who listens to you will keep thinking, does he mean, or does she mean what she said? Is something else beyond that? Whereas monotheistic cultures, they usually take it and say, okay, what is said is true, we'll receive it as it is. So in such different cultures, in a low trust society, sometimes you may need to communicate in such a way that the truth is communicated, but communicated not directly and straight, but through stories, then through incidences and context, and going back to past situations and bringing it clear that this is the situation and we need to address it. The fourth broad area is the communication styles. Some cultures are direct, some are indirect. If you want to get something done, you'll tell him directly, go get it done. In some other cultures, if you want to get it done, you would indirectly ask the person, would you be willing to consider exploring this? And even saying yes or no is a challenge. A simple Example is, when you're asked, do you want more food? In a southern culture or an indirect culture, we generally say no. But what we mean is, maybe I would like to have some more, but I should say first no. And I expect the person to ask me again, then I'll say, okay, maybe I'll have a little more. Whereas in direct culture, they ask, you want more food? We'll say no, that's it. So be careful when you are asked, do you need more food or not? Similarly, some cultures are story-based. Some cultures are factual. So in a story-based, we need to sit through the meetings of story-based conversations, even in decision-making. My friends who are part of such a culture says it takes hours for a decision to be taken, but at the end of the day, everybody stands together for the decision because they all agreed through the stories they heard. Similarly, oral versus written. Some cultures perceive written as a punishment, whereas oral is better accepted. Recognizing that, how do you decide what method will you use, communication styles? And finally, nonverbal communication is equally important. The posture, the distances, the facial expression, sitting or standing. Let me end this section with one more story. As I was leading an organization, I used to sit and work on my laptop and computer, and then I used to get backache. People would walk in for meetings, and about 2 or 3 minutes into the meeting, I would stand up because I'm having a backache, and the staff also would stand up and say, okay, I'll come back later. For them, me standing was the signal that the meeting is over. Because they cannot expect the senior person to stand up and they sit down. And the signal which I was giving to them was, the meeting is over, you can go. And I would tell them, sit down, I just want to stand and talk. They would not sit down and talk. In our culture, when a senior person stands, a junior will not sit. And I had to constantly communicate, it is only because of my backache. So very important how non-verbal communication is important. So we looked at 5 broad areas, the language and words, the cultural values, which includes individualism versus collectivism, power distances, uncertainty avoidance, masculinity versus femininity, long-term versus short-term. We looked at 3rd, the worldviews, how that affects how communication is perceived, the styles of communication, direct, indirect, factual and story-based, oral or written, and finally non-verbal. Now, none of us can learn all this and then engage. But we can develop some disciplines. We can be a listener, not just hearers. Listening as we can communicate and understand what are they perceiving, what are they saying, what is that they are communicating to us through what they are saying. Listen beyond what you hear. The second is, build trust. You be trustworthy and intentionally build trust. Because what we mean will be received better if they trust us. And more than us and they, we become part of a community which is journeying together, though we are cross-cultural from different cultures. So relationship is a foundation. If you have a relationship, many of this can be mitigated and openly addressed and celebrated in one sense, say that, okay, your culture, this is what you meant, but our culture, this is what it is, and laugh over it. I want to end with the example of Jesus. Consider the culture he lived in. Hierarchical, hyper distance, honor shame based, low trust, patriarchal society. What did he do? He listened and heard what was not said. He understood their heart. He communicated stories, images, word pictures, at the same time gave out facts. So he was both factual and story. He could speak the truth, but the love was quite evident. He was speaking truth in love, and the love would be evident through the way he speaks. He would reprimand in a shame-based culture without shaming people, because he shared life with them. He lived and journeyed with them as part of one family and community.